But the biggest goal is to get on set. You cannot sit there and say you want to be in the film industry and you're not taking those steps to build that foundation. You can't be too good. I have a lot of people that come to me and be like, oh, I want to be just like you. And I'm like, well, here are the things that I did that they're like, oh, I don't want to do that. Well, then baby, you don't want to be like me, because all of that got me to here.
The big question is this: how do screenwriters like us connect to the people, the resources, and information that allow us to tell our stories, make powerful movies, and leave the legacy that our community deserves? These are the burning questions that I'm going to explore week after week, and I want to welcome you to the Script Your Success podcast. Recording is in progress. Good morning and welcome, Omega Keys, writer, director, producer from Atlanta, Georgia, by way of Michigan City, Indiana. How are you today?
I am awesome, because I get to talk to another beautiful Black queen today.
Oh, thank you so much. So tell me, let's start off by talking about a little bit about what it is that you do, some of the projects that you've worked on and things like that.
I am a filmmaker, essentially a content creator. What I do in my own business, I write, direct, produce, set design, run camera. Mm-hmm. I know everything in filmmaking from start to finish. And on the larger side, I have worked on, when I'm talking larger side, I'm talking about those $1 million productions. Mm-hmm. I have worked as a first AD, a unit production manager, but I didn't start there. I started out as being a background extra, working as a a stand-in, mm-hmm. then moving, you know, being nosy with the camera, asking questions, moving mm-hmm. to the camera department, moving to the locations department. I'm someone who will do anything to get the job done.
Right, right. You are all woman.
Yes.
I appreciate that. So tell me, what if you had to choose, like if God said, Omega, you get to do one and there will be nothing that stops you. Which of all these roles that you feel, which one are you most passionate about?
See, I'm glad God don't play with me like that, because he knows. He knows better. We can't do that. But if I had to choose one, I would say what underlying, I'm always the writer first, because I have to write the content in order to create it. Okay. So that would be the one.
Now, I would have guessed that you would say director.
Well, I got to write stuff first to get to the directing.
You know what? That's absolutely right. And I can understand that, because I am a writer first as well. Okay, so how did you get into the business? Now, I know your mother was a civil rights activist and your greatest cheerleader. So you want to tell me how you got inspired to become a filmmaker?
It was a long story. By way of the military, actually, I used writing when I was in service as my outlet. So basically, you know, a lot of veterans, we suffer from PTSD and things like that. So I didn't realize writing was my coping mechanism, but it was something that I've always done as a child, you know, growing up in poverty, things like that. I always wrote. I didn't realize that was a coping mechanism for me. So I started writing while in the military. And in the military, I used to do, sometimes our training videos sucked. Mm-hmm. So I used to just, you know, rewrite, you know, some of the training videos as kind of a joke. And at that time, I actually had a book publishing company. Mm-hmm. So I had someone turn in a book of mine to an actual larger publisher, and it got published. But by way of that, one of my nieces said, Auntie, you know, when I'm getting ready to get out the military, Auntie, I think you'll be great in the film industry. I was like, what? Mm-hmm. I was like, my first thing that I went to was being in front of the lens. Mm-hmm. So I immediately was like, heck no, I'm not getting on camera. That's not me. Like, why would you even think I want that? She was like, no, just, I think if you just get into that world, you would like it. I'm like, girl, whatever. She submitted me for a casting for this show. It's so crazy. The show was just starting. You know, Vampire Diaries? Mm-hmm. Well, the spinoff of the show was called The Originals. Okay. It was their very first season. It was the second episode. They had already shot the pilot, but the second episode, and my niece had submitted me, they were looking for witches. My niece submitted me 3:00 in the morning. By 8:00, I was on set.
Hey, you liking this podcast? Well, you can support us by liking, sharing, and giving us reviews on all major podcast platforms. Look for us at scriptyoursuccesspodcast.com and be sure to tell a friend. Wow.
And I got pulled from being a witch. You know, I got the work with the witches, but they needed a black stand-in for the Sabine, the lead witch.
Right. Okay.
And so like I got pulled from doing background work immediately into standing work. And when as you're standing or background, you get to see everything going on. And you know, you're like that fly on the wall. And as a stand-in, you're listening to those conversations with the directors, with the producers, how they're talking to the actors. And the amazing thing about being on a TV show, there's a different director almost every episode.
Right. That's right.
So you're learning from the good and you're learning from the bad. And so that's how I got started. And I did work with that show for 3 seasons. And when they weren't filming, the same casting company that I got that from, that woman put me on everything. I think 1 year, I worked on almost 40 shows in 1 year. And I, when I'm talking about week to week, day to day, I was on a different set. She was running me, but I had become one of her best go-to people.
Right.
That she would literally, it was times where I would be filming on the originals and she's like, look, we have this, Marvel is filming. We need you over here. Mm-hmm. So it was, you know, just different things like that. I worked my butt off. But for me, that was me going to school for me, for the film industry, because baby, when I say I was learning, I was learning. I was writing down things. I kept my notebook with me. I was continuing to write and improve my story, because one thing as a stand-in, you also get those scripts, the sides, those daily sides. So I'm looking at that and measuring up my writing to it. And one time, an actual director had snatched my notebook from me, just playing around, didn't realize that I was actually writing a script. Mm-hmm. And he actually read some of it. He was like, you know exactly what you're doing. Keep at it. Don't let anybody take it from you. And so that started in 2013. And, you know,
and the rest
once I stepped on that set, I figured out what was missing. I always felt like something was missing, even though I was in the military, 14 years active duty to reserve. Mm-hmm. So 16 years total. I always felt like something was missing from me. And when I stepped on a film set, baby, I found it.
All right. So being all in all positions behind the scenes as a stand-in, as an extra, through your acting endeavors was your film school. Was that an accurate way to say it?
Yeah, that was my film school, because I also got to work directly with the cameraman. I asked the cameraman 50 million questions, and me being a black woman on a set and asking the camera guys, they were so eager to show me. There were sometimes they even let me on camera to set it up before the main cast got on there. Nice. So I've got to work with, you know, those big, you know,
to sit
those $30,000 cameras and set it up and set the shots up. And then that's hurry up and fun. Get off the equipment before the main cast get there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've done a little bit of that. It is fun. So now let's flash forward to 2017. Domestic Seduction. Tell me about that.
Domestic Seduction. That was my first feature film based off of, you know, a book that I wrote. And I just wanted to step out of my shell. I had did, you know, practice with my web series, which is the Backstories to Donors, which is, you know, a book. And it's a big, huge series that everything is leading us to that for future reference. But Domestic Seduction, it's just like, I knew when I wrote that script that it was with every intent. I mean, when I wrote the book, excuse me, I knew I was going to write the script and turn it into. And I actually had a childhood friend who was an actor who really encouraged me to do it. And I didn't know it's because he wanted me to write a character for him.
Did you write it, though?
Yeah. And he did. And he starred in it. And it was, you know, it was good. That was it. But now, like, Keeping Seasons is funny because now we've come full circle. I've revised the script. I've, you know, added a little extra. I've, you know, definitely improved since we're in 2020 from 2017. We're actually refilming it with a new spiced up story. And it's called Keeping Secrets now.
Right. Okay. So is that, because I'm looking at my notes. Okay. So that's not on your IMDb yet.
What, Keeping Secrets?
Yeah.
Yeah, because we're not filming it until July.
Because we don't film until July.
Yes, we just literally locked the cast. We have an amazing cast. We got some faces that, you know, people have seen in a couple of things. Mm-hmm. So, you know.
That's so exciting.
Yeah.
So I want to, you mentioned something that got you a lot of work. Because one of the things that we're doing on the Script Your Success podcast is trying to help aspiring filmmakers, especially those of color, understand the things that they cannot Google when it comes down to creating success for yourself.
Right.
So one of the things that you just mentioned a little bit ago is that your casting manager or your agent was, you became the go-to person for her.
Yes.
So can you talk about how being reliable and moving with integrity has helped you in your career?
It's just because people know if you ask me to do something and I actually agree to it, I do what I say I'm going to do. I am just that person. I have always been that person. Like, I just never want to be the person to let somebody down intentionally. Mm-hmm. So, you know, even, you know, to my detriment sometimes, like my body can be saying no. And I'm like, nope, we about to, I said I was going to do it. Let's go. So that's just one of the things. She knew I was going to arrive early, mm-hmm. be professional and shift and pivot where she needed me to be. Because let me tell you, that first two seasons of the originals was brutal. It was one of the best worst sets I have ever been on, because it was hard work. It was a lot of strife with the producers. Like, you know, it was some going through some changes with the producers. It was going through some changes with the DP. So it was like those power struggles going on, and those people kind of take it out on you. But because I had served in the military, I'm like, y'all ain't shooting at me, I don't care. Like, you know, I would literally, they would look at me and I literally be like, so,
right.
So, okay. And go and do what I know needs to get done. Mm-hmm. So it's just that. And so, you know, just constantly being requested, and those same people on those sets, they go and work on other things during, you know, when they have the off season, they're working on other projects. So they're requesting me to work, like, hey, where's our girl? You know, even at the time, it's funny because they actually thought I was in my 20s at the time. Mm-hmm. And I'm not. So, I'm way older. So that was the funny part. They all thought I was very young until one day I was on, and it was actually my birthday, and they realized that I was 40.
Because black don't crack.
That's right. They were so shocked. But yeah.
Okay. So then tell me about how it was directing your first feature film. Did you do, like, you talked about cutting your teeth on your web series?
Yes.
And what are some of the things that you learned from the web series that you brought into directing your feature film?
Okay. One thing that I learned on the web series is funny, because I never set out to be a director. Hmm. So one of the things I learned, for my web series, I was actually in the market to hire someone to be the director. Okay. Because at that time I had not directed, so I didn't feel like I was strong enough. But in the interviewing process, I kind of got insulted by a few people. And I said, baby, let me show you what I can do. Mm. Because somebody asked me, what are my credentials? And I was like, my credentials are, I'm cutting you this check. But, but I was like, oh, okay, well, let me use this web series, you know, to show you what I can do. And this is the thing. I already had directed in me from being on that TV show. Mm-hmm. Because it literally, when you're a stand-in, you have to watch everything that the actors and cast doing. And if there's some changes while they're going to get their hair or makeup done, then you have to be the one to turn around and direct the cast members to tell them what to do and how they're supposed to move. Okay, this change, you need to do this and that. So I was literally already mimicking the directors I saw. And so it came to me naturally, and I just happen to be good at it from my leadership skills from being in the military. I'm not one of those overly barren people. I give people enough space to breathe, because I know how people can shut down.
Right. Right.
You know, I just learned, it just came naturally. So once I did it for the web series, going into the feature film was no big deal. The only big deal was I did have, like, in this industry, you will have men that challenge your knowledge. Mm-hmm. And so I may not know the technical term of something, but I know exactly what I want and what I'm trying to achieve. So there was one point when filming that, when one of the grips, he kept asking the DP, like, I'm literally behind the camera at this point, and he asked the DP, is that what you want? Is that how you like it? And I'm literally standing right there. I was like, excuse me? It don't matter what he wants or what he likes. It's what I like, and I'm the one who set it up. So yeah, let's go. Like, I literally set up the shot. And so he kind of, like, at that moment was like, whatever. But the next day, guess who wasn't on set? So because I want that I'm not going to be uncomfortable on my own set, and I'm not going to allow anyone else to make anybody else uncomfortable. So,
yeah. So I want to dive into that a little bit, because set etiquette is really what you're tapping into. And that is where a lot of people rip their pants right open, and, and they don't even realize they're ruining it for themselves. So once, when I was working on the set, and I was a new EP, producer, all of that, right? Mm-hmm. And I had that same experience where the AD that I hired to assist the new writer director that we were working with thought that she was calling the shots.
Mm-hmm.
And she was talking to me like I was her PA. And I had to tell her that night, I said, if I were a wealthy white man, you would have never opened your mouth to speak to me that way.
Exactly.
And I need you to bring that energy back to set, or don't come back.
Yeah. And see,
it sounds like you had to do the same thing.
Yeah, a lot of times. But I've learned, like, I will pull you to the side and correct you. However, if you do it again, you get it where you act up. So that way you will know you will never do that again.
Black mama rules.
Yes. Like, you can, I've gave you the warning. So, you know, get it together and pull. And, you know, and it's funny because I learned a lot. Actually, I did pre-production on Black Panther. Mm-hmm. And so in the pre-production, I got to work a lot with Ryan Coogler directly and the first AD, Rachel. It's funny because I had just worked with Rachel on Confirmation. Mm-hmm. With Kerry Washington. And so when we got to Black Panther and Rachel was back again, it's like we already had that familiarity.
Right.
And so me and Rachel being cool, then Ryan just was like, you know, hey, like he would literally ask me, what did I think about something? I'm like, you talking to me? Look, and I'm just extra cheesy grinning because that was his first time doing something that big. Cause you know, he was just coming off of Fruitvale Station.
Right. Which was amazing.
Yes, it was. So coming into this new world, but the fact that he would say stuff, okay, yo, so I need y'all to get down there and do the thingy, and I want the shot to look like this. And when he didn't know the technical terms, but everybody was comfortable, okay, we got you. We know what you're talking about. I knew that it was okay for me not to memorize all the technical terms or something. And people were just using that to try to make it feel like I didn't know what I was doing, because they wanted to knock me down a notch. But this is the thing. You may know that technical term, and that's good and well, but I know all this other stuff. Right. You just know that little bitty section very well. Well, I know everything. Mm-hmm. But it's just trying to, you know, that power struggle. And my thing is this. If I've already hired you, where's the struggle?
Right. Why? What is the problem here?
Yeah.
Okay. So. And that definitely makes sense. Now, have you noticed, because we always say it's a small world. How would you say that applies as a filmmaker?
It applies a lot, because it's funny, because some of those people that I have worked with on those major sets are now applying for my productions.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's just a thing, like, because even though I run small productions, I run them like they are major, like the organization that I have, how people are going to feel when they're on sets and things like that. So people want to work with me because of that. I make them feel, you know, everybody's part of my family. Everybody's part of my team when it comes to that. So it's really crazy. But like now I'm getting these emails from people that I've worked with a long time ago, like, hey, I'm kind of offended you haven't asked me to work with you yet. And I'm like, look, that's because I know your pay rate.
Right?
From that union film you were on. I'm like, I cannot, at this point in time, I cannot afford you. But the fact that they're reaching back to me, mm-hmm. like, hey, we see you and we want to help. But I'm so blessed right now. I say that to say, I do have one person that when I was first starting out, cause I kind of left out that, like, I actually did stunts too starting out.
She's the badass.
Yes. So one of the stunt coordinators that I started out with is actually the stunt coordinator for Keeping Secrets this time around. And he's, yeah, I mean, we've maintained a great relationship. He's an awesome person, real laid back. He looks very mean, but he's not. Alex is just awesome. So the fact that we're working together on my project is just, you know, because this man literally works for Marvel. He actually did that series. Oh my gosh, what is it? It's a 3-part series.
And it's escaping you right now, right?
Yes, it absolutely is. It is the, you know, they were putting those people basically in boxes that you had to be in these certain, not districts. It's almost like Hunger Games, but it wasn't Hunger Games. Oh God.
The girl in Australia. Yeah, you can tell me.
Don't but it was a major 3-part series, and like he helped me with that. He helped me with he was a stunt guy coordinator for Containment, which is a series that was on Netflix. Yeah,
right.
So for the pilot episode, I did stunts with them, and then I ended up being one of Lex's cops, and you can actually see me in one of the episodes. Lex is going off on us; it's so funny, and mm-hmm. I'm just sitting. You know, I had some lines, but I guess my facial movements were even better. But like, it's just crazy because it's coming back full circle. The guy that was hiring me, now I've hired.
Right. That is amazing. So now I'm going to start to ask you a few questions that maybe you can kind of drop some gems for those who aspire to be where you are today. So if I were a young filmmaker trying to get started and film school is not an option, the military was your film school, what would you tell me? Like, what are 2 or 3 things that you would tell me to start doing to get myself started today?
Get your butt on set. Don't feel like you're too good to be an extra, mm-hmm. because your extras are your next PAs. They're your next department heads. They're all that stuff. Get your butt on set to even see if it's something you want to do. I mean, my first experience on set was a 16-hour day.
Yeah.
So, you know, you have to be prepared for that type of stuff. But, you know, you have to get on set and see what departments you want to even move into. Everybody doesn't want to go into director. Maybe you want to be in hair and makeup. Maybe you want to be in wardrobe. Maybe you want to do locations. Get on set so you can see all these things. Maybe you want to be something that's you're not even thinking of until you get there.
Right.
But the biggest goal is to get on set. You cannot sit there and say you want to be in the film industry and you're not taking those steps to build that foundation. You can't be too good. I have a lot of people that come to me and be like, oh, I want to be just like you. And I'm like, well, here are the things that I did that they're like, oh, I don't want to do that. Well, then, baby, you don't want to be like me, because all of that got me to here.
Right.
That's the foundation. That's why I have a strong foundation, because every day on set is not going to be a great day.
Yeah. And I tell people all the time, the set life is not a pretty life.
It's not for the weak.
It's not for the feeble. Can you give us a glimpse into the day in the life of Omega Keys, director of Keeping Secrets? What is your life? You're in pre-production right now. So what is your life?
No, hold on. Also in post-production, because Faded Reunion releases June 25th on my that's birthday. Right. So that's
my birthday is June 22nd.
Hey.
Wow. See, I knew we got a lot in common. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So
the day of the life, I'm going to take you there because, well, you know, both ways. So we're finishing up the final edits, mm-hmm. For Faded, you know, down to those final locking mm-hmm. the scenes, you know, for that. That's the back end for that. So I am meticulously going over footage for, you know, cleaning up anything that we missed. Like last week, I caught a water bottle deep in the background on set. You know, I'm highlighting, drawing circles, sending this back. Take that out. Stuff like that. So on the post-production side, that's where I am analyzing it. And I also edit as well, but I did 43 minutes of this film and then passed it on to, you know, someone else that can finish it up so I can focus on the pre-production mm-hmm. for Keeping Secrets. Now on this side, the life of the director is answering a bunch of emails because people have 50 million questions because they were gearing up for the table read on the 21st. I am working on my shot list. Even though we're not filming until July, I am working on my shot list because shot lists take a lot of time, especially for a feature film. Like, so I'm walking through that. I am working with my DP to, when I watch certain films and I see like certain camera movements and stuff, mm-hmm. I'm working with him to see, is it even possible with our budget? Right. Can we mimic, you know, certain shots? You know, stuff like that. Constantly meeting with my business partner, Kathy. We have every morning we have a meeting and, you know, go over the things that we need to do and how, because it's not just about the here and now or keeping secrets. We're 2 years down the road. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to, you know, connect things and make sure we're staying on target, you know, for that or something else that we miss. Just making sure we're not missing things and piecing it all together. And you got to understand, like, I'm not just a director, I'm the writer, director, and producer. Mm-hmm. So as we're going through things, I'm having to change the script too. Yes. to match and meet when I'm going through this shot list. I'm looking at something, I'm looking at the script, like, that's not, you know, as I'm trying to work through the shots, I'm like, that's not gonna work. So I'm literally have to rewrite, you know, a scene in the script, or, you know, something's missing, I need this line to be said in order for this to work.
Right.
Yeah. So it's going back and forth with that as well. And dealing with wardrobe, things like that. Right now, like I said, the feds are about to come get me because I have so many things for Keeping Secrets. Keeping Secrets, you know, it involves a serial killer. So mm-hmm. it is a horror film. And so I'm ordering stuff, and I'm also working on Kathy, my partner. She is an amazing set designer as well. So coordinating with her to make sure, you know, things are going to work. I'm like, you know, I've ordered these foam heads, you know, for wigs the other day. Mm-hmm. And what I see with them and what she sees on them are two of them was like, I think these are going to be really creepy. And she's like, all right, I need to get with the MUAs to make sure they make up their faces. I didn't even think about that. So it's like, you know, those type of, you know, things going back and forth, making sure we all have what we need. And, mm-hmm. you know, the wardrobe, getting these dancer outfits together and trying to, you know, I'm trying to get a lot of stuff ahead of time. So when we get mm-hmm. to the table read, it's table read, wardrobe, and they're also going through makeup and hair.
Right.
Because that gives us a little over 45 days before we're filming at that point. So I'm very organized. So
you have to be in all these different places. So let me ask you a question. You're talking about the pre-production and looking at the script as a director. What's the difference that you notice the most when you write the script versus when you put on your producer lens or your director lens for that same story?
The difference is budget. And I'm going through like the producer side of me, and as well as Kathy, she will, you know, Kathy, I'll talk to Kathy to see if we can get this done. And then, but the other producer, the EP side of me is like, you better change it because we're not spending that. Like, so that, but the director of me has that fight, like, oh my gosh, this will make a beautiful shot. This would mm-hmm. be seen. But, you know, going through that, trying to make it be the best that it can be without shortchanging the production at the time, and not just throwing stuff in just to have stuff in just because it'd be a cool shot. But does it make sense?
Right.
So it's all of that. Like, when I put these hats on, I chop up the writer. I go through and I just chop myself up. And I mean, and I know it, and I know it's going to happen. But when I write, it's right just to get the story out. Get the story out, and then the director and the producer and me will fix it.
Now, one of the things that I hear you saying kind of indirectly is that you don't marry your script.
Nah.
And now, if you were, how would being attached to your script, do you think you'd be able to be successful as a director and producer if you were married to everything that you wrote when you were putting that down on paper?
No, I don't think so, because I've literally written, like, we've been in a moment and I've directed, and you get actresses or actors that don't show up. I've literally rewritten the script on set in order to fix it and make it work. If I was married to that, it would be such a blockage that I couldn't get past and fix the problem. But I can on the fly. And I also don't have problems with actors ad-libbing just a little bit to give it a little more life. I'd be like, let me see how you would do it, how you feel this character would do it. And sometimes it's even better than what I wrote. And that's okay, because it's still not taken away from the story. I have literally watched directors freak out, be like, say the lines exactly how I said it, like I wrote it. Like, I've heard that on set, and like you see the actors just get deflated because they're so married to, something in their head, and then the director just sucks it away from them. Now, don't get me wrong. If there is something that needs to happen in order for us to get down the road, of course, in scenes that they're not in, I need them to understand it. However, what I have done this time around that I have not done before, I have sent out the script to everybody involved in this project this time around. So there are no excuses. I don't care if you got one line in the script, you got the whole script, babe, because I need you to know why your one line is important. And so I feel like that is making a huge difference from some of the feedback that I'm getting. Oh, okay, now I understand why this is happening. So I'm avoiding some of those problems.
Okay, got you. So now let's talk about the tough stuff, the money. How do you get to the money that you need to produce your projects, besides your own pockets, of course?
Hey, look, when we get to there, let me find out. But no, this time around, we actually have a silent investor, but that silent investment came from watching me fund my own films and working my butt off. Like, even now, even with their funding, I'm still in my car driving Uber, making that money, because I'm looking, like I said, I don't look just at this film. I want to constantly have it. But it also comes back to, okay, what are you doing with these films once you film these films? The films need to make money. So right now, Surviving America's out there making us money. So that money comes and we're recycling it back through, because I don't owe anybody for my films, because I don't. I've already paid everyone. So when that money comes in, I just recycle it through. I pay myself back for the money that I spent out, and the rest of it is recycled back through. So that's how you do it once you get to my level. But like starting out, you do whatever it takes to make the money for those films. And like, I post pictures on Facebook, and I'm literally sitting in my car at the airport with my laptop, because I drive a SUV, so it's a longer wait for me to get a ride, and that's by design, because I have my laptop in the car and I am working in between getting a ride. I have no shame. That's like, some people can look down on that, but I'm clearing $300 a day, and
Which adds up.
it's all going to my film. So, hey, I'm not asking for permission. That's what I'm not doing.
I know that's right. She said, what you're not gonna do is tell me no.
Exactly. I leverage my credit. I have excellent credit. I burn my credit cards up. I got loans. I have all type of stuff going on to make these films happen.
Now, have you ever done a crowdfunding campaign to sort to feed your projects?
Yes, I did a crowdfunding campaign for Surviving America.
And how did that work out for you?
It worked out really well. I got like, it was a less than $10,000 project, because it was documentary style. And so like, I got $5,000 on the crowdfunding, and then I paid the other $5,000. So I mean, it went away. And I mean, I think some people are right now burnt out from all the crowdfunding, because we're just in a everybody has a crowdfunding thing for everything. I've seen it work for some people. I haven't seen it work for another people. But honestly, I don't. Right now, I don't have that time and energy to put in a crowdfund. If you're going to crowdfund, that's all your focus is, pushing that and pushing it. And I have too many other things that I need to do to make the films and projects happen that I just can't devote that time to it. I can look, I crowdfund myself.
Okay.
Yes, right now,
She's
because
like,
I don't
hey,
have
come over,
that.
let's do this.
Yeah, and I literally do. No, I literally say, like, my husband knows when it's time up and to amp up filming, I tell him, baby, you're not gonna see me that much in this
Yes.
time frame, because he knows. But he knew this coming into this relationship with me, because when we started dating, one of our first dates was on the film set. Like, he met me when he when before he went to work. I was literally working as a set design on a film set. And so he met me outside there, walking around introducing the people on the set, but I was at work. And so that's how we met. So, hey, either you in or you out. And he just sits there and he just grins. He's like, you got it.
He
He's
sounds like an
fine.
amazing man. So I want to talk a little bit about that because as female filmmakers, we have this additional pressure of family a lot of times that we have to deal with. And so how do you balance it all?
Well, it's my thing is y'all dealt with it while I was in the military. Y'all can understand that life. And I just made sure that, now, this is my second marriage. I just made sure that the person before we even got anywhere, that this is understood, because my kids already get it. They know the life. They know that sometimes they're going to be back there. Boy, adjust that light. And they know, like, my 15-year-old knows, already knows that his summer job is working on set.
That's right.
Yeah, they already know that, and they know where to help. So they're already in. And so anybody else is coming in, you're the factor. And I hate to say it like this, but I'm at a point in my life, either you on this train or you not. The train is moving. So if it comes a point in time where my significant other can't handle that, which I seriously doubt, because he loves this. Yeah, you just find the people that work with you. You make it known up front, and you don't hide those things. Like, look, this is what it is. Like, when he met me, I'm pulling, those 12 and 14-hour days. So, this it is what it is at this point. And this is the thing. This is my passion. I tried to hold back a couple years ago. It was like, oh, maybe I'm doing too much, maybe this and this. And I nearly lost my mind, because that brain and that creativity, it does not stop. It does not quit. It's going to keep turning whether I'm moving forward with it or not. And so I can either be crazy or I could be creative.
Because
So
they're
I
two
choose
sides
to
of the
be
same
creative.
coin.
Yeah, I chose to be creative, and this is my life. And if friends or family don't understand it, that's okay, because it's not for them. It is for me. This is my passion. I'm not stopping you from following yours, and nobody is stopping me from following mine.
Yeah, so one of the things that we talk about in the podcast, or I talked about in the podcast, is this thing of accountability. Now, I know you've heard of, like in the writing world especially, they talk about, oh, I need an accountability partner. I need somebody to help me stay on track. Uh-oh. Go ahead and get them.
No. Why are you waiting on other people? Why you waiting? I mean, what are you waiting on? That's not the other people's gift. It's not for them. Be accountable to your dang self. I will call cadence in my head if I have to get it done. Like, what's wrong with you? You're too weak. Get up, get it. You got this. You've been through worse. Like, I have to self-motivate, because when I stepped into this industry, I didn't see anyone like me doing this. I couldn't reach out and touch, Oprah. Can't reach out and touch Ava DuVernay. I didn't see any of those folks doing it. When I stepped on those film sets, there were no Black people,
That's right.
none in those higher up positions, not one. So I had to motivate myself, because they weren't going to. I can't have somebody else help to hold me accountable for my gifts that are given to me. That's a cop out.
You went there, and I appreciate it. Look, it's all right. It's a cop out. Accountability is an inside job.
Yes, you got to do the work for yourself. If I
That's
waited
right.
on If I waited on people, I would be absolutely nowhere, because most people looked at me and said I was crazy for having a book publishing company, told me I was crazy for joining the military, told me I was crazy for daring to have a, you know, a production company. So who would have held me accountable? They were too busy telling me I couldn't do it in order to encourage me. So no, but I will tell you this, I do have an amazing partner now. We do encourage each other and we keep it going, but I wouldn't say we're accountability partner, because we're too busy. You know, I'm calling her, but look, I have these 10 things now.
And you figure out how to make it happen together.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
I have a partner. We are the same way. 2 a.m. phone calls, emails all times of the night, text messages, but we're getting it done.
Exactly.
So I completely understand. So I wanted to ask you a question. When it comes down to figuring out your path, what would you say is the first step? Like, if someone is confused around, I know you talked about getting on set, but for those who are in smaller areas, because like we're lucky to be in Atlanta and Chicago, right? Yeah. You know, Atlanta, Chicago, New York are pretty much LA, right? Are the four hubs, if you will. But if we're talking about somebody in Michigan City, what do you tell them? How do they, you know, how do they kind of figure it out?
I don't know, because I left Michigan City. So that's how I figured it, you know? You know, my thing is, if you want to be that, you take those steps to do that. I remember Taraji did an interview, you know, she cut out and left and went to LA with $700 and a kid.
Yeah.
So you make those moves and you make those changes. Because if I would have stayed in Michigan City, there is no way I would be where I am today.
That's right.
Because that mentality was not there. Those people were not there, you know, to help me get to where I am today. It would have been too much of a fight. And, you know, if you're young and thriving, there's always a way. Look, I came down to Atlanta. Yeah. You know, once I was out the military, I came down here by myself and kids. So, you know,
and look at you now.
Yeah. It was like at that point, my military disability checks and stuff hadn't even kicked in at that point. Like I was just straight living off of my book funding.
Now, what kind of stories? Now, I know you are a social activist at heart.
Yes.
And I've seen the projects that you have on your IMDb. They all are like really intriguing and they incite emotion and they force you to look at the world a different way. Yeah. So if you could summarize, what would you say your style of creativity is?
Always making them see us as we are, not through their lens.
I love that.
Yeah. And it doesn't have to be like all of my stuff isn't, you know, documentary style that just happened upon me. But, you know, we like fantasy because donors is fantasy. Mm-hmm. That's vampires. That's sexy. That's all of that. Mm-hmm. Faded reunion. That's drama. Mm-hmm. Keeping secrets is horror. But you're still going to get to see us as we are. That's right. That's my thing. Telling the stories through our lens so they can, you know, I'm not making anything palatable for other eyes.
I love that. Now that, thank you so much for saying that, because you know you cannot get out of this interview without telling me the story behind that Facebook post that you made where you were reading somebody the riot act. That's how we got here.
That is exactly how we got here. What happened with that is I have been promoting, you know, Faded Reunion, you know, the premiere party, the red carpet premiere party and my birthday badge. I have been promoting that. So I'm running, while I do post it on my personal pages, I am also running ads through my business pages. And I'm just going to say it. I was also in a screenwriting group. See, for us, there's a screenwriting group and then there's the Black screenwriting group,
right,
where we are safe. Mm-hmm. In that other screenwriting group, whenever someone Black posts something, someone white has to come on there and like basically tell them how their stuff isn't going to sell, how you're not going to be able to get anything. They're like they're big on, you know, shutting them down. So in the process of someone shutting someone else down about their black project and them telling them that they're going to sell, I was like, well, baby, I'm going to tell you right now, one of those books that you have seen up on a big screen for, I was the actual ghostwriter of that book for that well-known white man that you see, and that's on the screen. So I was kind of, you know, letting them have it that way.
Right.
Like, I wrote that and it's on the big screen, so it does sell. You
Oops.
know, that's the proof. And then I was listing all the other stuff. So he took it a step further. He happened to see my ad or whatever a week later, and he went directly on the post for my ad, and he was like, black films, they don't sell. They need to stop being written. They need to stop being financed. You know, we don't even need to be financed. So at that point, I was just like, dude, you trying to snatch my financing? Good luck. Because I'm not asking for permission. And that's why I'm in this situation. I am building, like, I look to Tyler Perry. Tyler Perry is big when it comes to that business side of building it your own, because
That's
can't
right.
nobody take it away from you. And that's what I'm trying to do. So in that moment, it was just a really good laugh about, you know, the financing. So you're gonna go to the other, you know, black person that decided to put up, you know, half the money for this film project and take it from them too, because you don't want to see a black film. I was like, there are 50 million and one white films that do not sell, but no one
Right.
ever talks about them. White people get those second chances.
That's right, and third and fourth.
Yes, and but we really don't. So you're not about to shut me down because you don't want to hear my black story. But the crazy thing is, if you look at the flyer, there are two black people on the flyer, and there are two other people on the flyer who are not black. But they saw those black faces. Oh my gosh, it's a black film, and lost their mind. And so, like, I was like, oh, you're mad that you see this black people? Well, you're gonna see my little black ass as the writer, the director, and the producer, and choke on that.
Right. When I saw that post, I said, "Ooh, I think I love her."
So I'm gonna give you something to be big mad. I don't backpedal because this is my passion, and I want somebody else out there coming behind me to know that you don't need their permission to make your film.
That's right. Well, all right. So now I got a rapid fire round of questions I want you to answer for
Let's
me.
go.
All right. Favorite movie of all time?
Oh my gosh, I'm a Star Wars fan. If anything Star Wars coming on, I'm watching it. And I'm talking about from the actual live action to the cartoons, I'm watching it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. You are definitely a Star Wars fan.
Yeah.
Coffee or tea?
Tea.
All right, night owl or early bird?
Depending on the
I know, right?
day.
All right, what is your favorite thing to do when you are not working? And I know that's not a lot, but what do you do when you're not working?
Whew, live in the moment.
I love that.
I've, you know,
I
set
love
things
that.
aside and live in the moment
All
of
right, now
whatever it is.
do you set New Year's resolutions?
Nope.
All right, I don't either.
Nope. I
Best.
set business plans.
I love it. Right. Business plans beat New Year's resolutions.
Yes.
All right. Do you have a best rapper of all time?
Rapper's Delight.
Okay. Can you spit a few bars?
Oh my gosh. No. If you wouldn't have asked me, I would have been able to.
Right.
But it's
That's
just like,
always the
it
way it
just,
goes.
yeah. What is
Okay.
it? Don't push me because I'm close to the edge. I'm trying. No, the message, that's what it is. I'm trying not to lose my head. It's like a jungle sometimes to make me wonder how to keep from going under. Okay,
All
there you go.
right. Okay. Last question. Fill in the blank. If I were not a filmmaker, I would probably be.
Miserable. Because I was miserable
I love
for all
it.
those years. I
Right.
was miserable. I mean, even when I flipped into, you know, being a book publisher and writing those books, it was still a piece missing. And I was just really I was trying to write as many books as I could to try to figure out what is it that is missing. So I will honestly say I will be miserable.
I love that. And one last question. If you were talking to someone, if you were talking to your younger self, what would you say to help make sure that you ended up where you are?
you're okay. It's nothing wrong with being different. It's nothing wrong with having these gifts. Don't hide yourself to make others feel great. Because there are times that I hid myself, and I think I would be so much further in life if I didn't hide myself to make others feel great.
Well, all right. Is there anything you want to share? You want to tell us about how we can connect with you on social media?
Yes, you can connect with me at Omega Keys on Instagram. That's O-M-E-G-I-A. That's K-E-E-Y-S. And you can follow the AFM Productions as well. And I would like to say, please get your ticket to the red carpet premiere. You don't even have to be there in person. We are going to have a live streaming option, not of all the events at the premiere, but for you to watch the film before everyone else. And I have on my little Blue Devils shirt because it is a class reunion, class of 2011 reunion. Okay. So it's all in fun.